Hello. Welcome to the Therapy Thursday podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Yu, and every single Thursday, I learn lessons from my own therapy sessions and I share them with all of you. I'm so ready to go through and grow through so much with you. Let's go. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Therapy Thursday. I'm your host, Kelly Yu, and I'm here with my amazing friend and co-host, Danny.
Hello, Kelly.
Oh, please.
Hi, Danny. Okay, I am so excited for this week's Oh Please. And I thought this was funny. I wrote it legitimately on this notebook next to me and I started laughing. So I was at Aldi the other day. If y'all don't know what Aldi is, it's this amazing grocery store where everything is so cheap and they have the best fruit. I don't understand how, but they really, really do. And when I was little, my mom used to love buying grapes. And you know, grapes are very finicky. You do not know if it's going to be a good grape or not. And you end up buying a whole bag and then you get home and you're like, this has no flavor, this has no juice, or they're totally rotten, right? Because they're in a bag. So when we were younger, my mom was like, no, it's okay. I'm going to take one, test one. And I don't know why I still to this day.
I do this.
No, but let me tell you, I felt so guilty when I was at Aldi. I took one grape out and wiped it on my sweater. I was like, oh, you know, I should just buy the bag. I don't need to test it. I'm sure it's fine. I was like, oh, please, why are you feeling so guilty about a stupid grape? You're not even stealing it. I don't know what this intense guilty conscience is. Maybe it's because I went to Catholic school for 8 years. Maybe it's because I went to Christian summer school for like 6 years. And I don't know what it is, because my mom would even say, no, you have to try it before you buy it. But I swear to you, when I was thinking of my Oh Please for this week, I just laughed at myself remembering how bad I felt.
Okay, but I'm going to take this on a different level, because I think this is an ethnic thing, because my mom was insistent that we tried the grapes before. Like, she was
so
like,
was my mom.
And cherries. She was like, anything that's like where you can try one because you're about to buy a whole bag, right? And I think what made me embarrassed was I felt like white people didn't do that. And so it's something that like I genuinely think about all the time, is like white people didn't do that, at least where I grew up. That was like a weird thing.
Yes.
And so then I didn't want to other myself by not being white. And so I was like, Mom, stop it. Like, don't do that in the grocery store. That's so embarrassing. And so that I think is maybe that resurfacing a little bit for you.
Oh, my goodness. If you all are not watching the video version of this, my jaw is underneath my foot right now. I totally agree, because we'd be standing there. You know, I'm Asian. Danny, can you give them your background?
Yes, my mom is a Colombian immigrant.
Okay. Yeah. So I definitely remember being at Jewel Osco or Dominic's, wherever we were, and there were no white ladies trying out the grapes with their kiddos.
Right. And you'd be like, Mom, stop it. Like, just leave it alone.
How do you just take the whole bag? Because that's the only fruit where you can test it. Okay. You can't peel open an orange. You can't bite an apple. But I felt so guilty. Anyway.
But you can. Hopefully. With an apple, you like touch the apple, you know? Like,
okay. Let me tell you something really bad that I do.
Yeah, go for it.
Pears.
You squeeze the pears?
This is disgusting. And please let me know if y'all do this. I dig my nail into it to see if it's ripe. Because that's when you know it's ripe.
And I've
never
done that.
Then I can
before.
Eat it today. Oh.
Okay. I've never done that. And I've never even thought
good.
To do that.
Okay, go on with your Oh Please.
Don't you get yuckies under your nails, though, and you're just like cringe for the rest of the day?
Honestly, I'm probably grosser than you think. Doesn't affect me at all. Doesn't. Okay, and
this
by
is a
the
good
way.
Confession. I like this.
No, by the way, honestly, when you said the thing about nails, one time I was getting my nails done and I probably had gotten avocado under my nails during that week and probably left it there for a day so it stained. And my nail lady said to me, why is your nail underneath there green? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Is it like infected? And she's like, no, it's not an infection. And I swear to you, I realized that I've been eating a lot of avocado that week.
And you were just like, I don't know what it could possibly be.
I didn't realize it, and then I felt so mortified when I did realize it 2 minutes later, because
oh
I was like, oh my gosh, is my nail infected? She's like, nope, it's just a color. Anyway, Oh Please to me three times now. I just did three big Oh Pleases.
Mine is not in any of the same vein, but I'm sure many of us can relate. Have you ever been at like a Starbucks or a popular, I'm going to say like a chain, because it's someplace mm-hmm. where you can mod your coffees like an insane amount mm-hmm. with whatever toppings and stupid things you want to fix it up. Have you ever been going at like a, you know, a busy time, like 4 p.m. and you have somewhere to be and the person in front of you mods their coffee to an insane point. No. And so I was just at a Starbucks earlier this week and it was so funny because I had basically roped my husband into going for a walk with me and I was like, we'll get iced teas. Like, it'll be really fun. And we ended up being at Starbucks for about 20 minutes because this young woman in front of me, no shade, girl, but if you're going to mod your order like that, like, can you put in a mobile order? Can you put it in advance? And it was just like this insane mod to her tea order. And they made it wrong. I'm not joking, 4 times. And I felt so bad for these young women who were working in this Starbucks because they were so embarrassed and the line just kept getting longer. There was a line out the door. There was orders that were just like not being able to be processed through the mobile pickup, like just insanity in like the course of this one order. And they literally passed it off to 2 different people and they still couldn't make it properly. And finally, the manager was like, can I change your order? Like, we're not going to get this right. And the part of this, I'm like, oh, please. Is can everyone just stop watching TikToks on Starbucks and making that their drink order? Please. Oh, please. Please, 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 please. For my sanity.
Well, you know what that
– am I wrong? Okay, here's, am I here... wrong?
No, you're totally right. I can't – I would get severe anxiety watching that play out.
It was awful.
And the fact that you chose to share that, oh, please, is so wild to me because Danny just gave us a perfect example of 2 people who are not people pleasers. And that is what we were talking about today.
I'm shaming this girl and I'm like, but please live your best unapologetic life.
Right. Like, she's not making any apologies. And the people that work at the Starbucks, that's what I think is actually... This is extreme, but how cool is it that she's like, no, I said to you how I want it. You're not doing it right. And then though, the employee said, you know what? I'm not here to please you over and over and over again. Yeah. This is not going to work.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Good intro.
That's wild. No, thank you for that. Oh, all of us have been in that situation. And I am the type who, because I am a people pleaser, if they... Okay, I wouldn't have accepted it wrong probably the first time, but if they did again, I would have just swallowed it. Mm. You know, that what would you have done if they made it wrong the first time? Just the first time.
I think it depends because...
No. What would you do the first time they don't make it right?
I honestly would take it. But I think it comes from a place of like, I just value my time. And like, mm-hmm. unless it's really out to lunch, I'm just going to take the thing and drink it. I don't care that much. That being said, if I'm at a restaurant and they bring my food out wrong, I send it back. Do you? Right. Are you a person that if you're at a restaurant and they get your food wrong, you send it back?
100%. But so there have been many times. Oh, there have been many times where I'm like, I'm allergic to that, but it's cool.
Oh my gosh. No. And the funny thing is, you know, I come from hospitality and I've never been offended when somebody has sent back their food because we've screwed it up. And I'm sure at Starbucks, for the most part, this situation aside, for the most part, I think, you know, if you order an iced coffee and they bring it to you hot, I don't think they're going to be upset or offended, but we take it upon ourselves to feel, we feel that. We make up a narrative in our head before it even happens.
That's so true. I think a lot of people pleasing comes from being very empathetic. And what empathetic means a lot of times is you put yourself in other people's shoes without them asking you to do that. And I agree with you too, Danny. I was a dishwasher at a dining hall. And for me, that's like, I just dealt with whatever people threw at me. I didn't care. It was just part of the job. So, hey, if anyone messes with your order or does something, guess what? It's just our job. We're back there cleaning and whatever. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. Anyway, jumping into people pleasing, I noticed that 3 of the very simple themes that came from me noticing little times where I'm falling into people pleasing, there's just a couple quick things you can kind of ask yourself. And the first thing is this statement. It is easy for me to say no. I actually think it's gotten easier, but it's not easy. Danny?
That's pretty easy for me to say no.
Boom. See, that's why I love this. And then another one is, it is easy for me to stand up for myself. I think that it actually is, but I have noticed that in my history, I would really turn into a little shell when it came to guys. And that's so embarrassing to say.
Right.
But other aspects of my life, I can kind of at least speak my mind. And there's something about romantic relationships that make you go, what do you want me to say?
Right. I think it's interesting how we all have kind of that kryptonite where it's like, I can say no to all of these people, but the second that I'm in, for me, it's a work circumstance. I struggle so much more with advocating for myself. I struggle so much more with standing up for myself. I have a harder time saying no. You know, I can think back on most of my relationships in my 20s. And I think I was pretty good at saying no and pretty good at being, you know, standing up for myself. Put me in a work situation. It doesn't matter if I was folding t-shirts at the Gap. I was just like, I don't want to say no to you. I will do anything you want.
Right. And the circumstances are so different because they're not someone that cares that much about you when it comes to work. Is you have to earn your place. Yes. You have to earn your place. So what are you going to say no to? Your money?
But also I have friends that like they have the mentality of this is just a job and they can totally remove themselves from the people pleasing space because they're like that boss would never do that for me. And they just they're so good at, at having that. And I'm like, I could never think like that. Like my brain just does not naturally allow me to be in that space. I think it's very interesting, you know, the difference.
And that
is,
and that's an extreme, right? That's kind of an extreme. I mean, to be like, well, my boss wouldn't ask me to fold a shirt. Well, I couldn't ask my boss to fold a shirt. Well, yeah, obviously.
More so, I think the idea that, you know, if a boss was like, hey, do you want to come into work tomorrow? I need a shift covered. I know people who can just look their boss in the eye and say, no, I'm not one of those people. Okay. I'm not one of those people. I would have to come. I would literally lie out my teeth being like, oh, my dog is getting spayed and I have a community. Like I would make up some insane thing to avoid letting them down because I wanted them to think that, you know, the reason that I wouldn't come in is because I'm not a hard worker or because I don't value my position at this place. It's because something else crazy in my life is happening. Even if the reality is I just want the day off so I can go day drink with my friends. Hello, 18-year-old Danny, you know.
Right. Well, that makes me think of the last thing that I was going to say is sometimes being a people pleaser can feel good. And that's a really confusing thing that I've had to come to terms with because I think every time I think of people pleasing, it has such a negative connotation. And a lot of us feel like, oh, I'm a people pleaser. I need to fix that right away. But can we take a second and just realize there are some times when we're not only betraying ourselves, which what a lot of people pleasing is. A lot of it is burying your actual true thoughts and feelings and preferences for someone else's pleasure, happiness, ease of life, and you end up inconveniencing yourself. But the real truth about a lot of my people pleasing was I actually craved someone's validation a lot more than caring for myself at the time, which was an unhealthy mindset because I wasn't connected with myself. But at the time, if we can let ourselves have a different lens on our people-pleasing tendencies of the past, a lot of times it made me happy to make other people happy because I didn't know how to make myself feel happy. So if you're dealing with that, don't judge it as much. Just know, oh, it's great that I noticed that. Because you can't just say all people pleasing makes you feel terrible. That's too extreme.
It's too extreme. And I think my question for you on that is to kind of deep dive into that particular form of people pleasing where you're searching for validation. Were you looking for somebody to treat you a certain way? Were you being maybe manipulative?
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. The word manipulative too has such a negative context because realistically it is used in a lot of ways that are not good. But manipulation truly means kind of doing something for a specific result, right? For example, you get your neck manipulated by a chiro and it feels really good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they call them.
Yeah,
they
you're
call
looking
them
for an outcome.
Manipulations.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, I do think that most of the times when I would try to say the right thing or make someone feel better by not saying, oh, I don't really like that, or I don't really like that show, or I don't really want to go there, or I don't really like this food, but you cooked it for me. It was me kind of being manipulative so that they would stay in a good mood to be a good mood with me, or they would notice that I'm trying to just be so go with the flow. So hopefully you're going to be nice and go with the flow with me.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, I hope if I act this way, you're going to do that for me.
Right. Yeah. You were behaving in a way to curate a particular reaction for them. And how disappointing when they didn't react the way you wanted to.
Well, there goes childhood. And that's what we really wanted to talk about today, is kind of where people pleasing really comes from. And Danny, I don't know about you, but mine is obviously family trauma. But before we get into that one, why don't you tell me? I'm really curious to think about where a lot of your people pleasing kind of came from, because you did say in work you can kind of not really feel as free, but in your mm-hmm. family and stuff you can.
Yeah, I think my family has a very different communication style than most families. We are very mm-hmm. upfront with each other. You'll hear me talk about this a lot, but I'm confrontational. That stems from mm-hmm. my whole family being confrontational. So people pleasing wasn't necessarily something we used in my family to garner particular results. Now, that being said, I definitely feel like in high school and in college, I wanted to present myself as a very palatable person. I wanted to be really likable, and not in the mm-hmm. sense of I want to agree with everything you're saying and I want us to have all the same hobbies and the same interests. It was more like an ease thing. I want it to be easy to spend time with me. So I think you can relate to this. I have, you know, strict parents who had a completely different upbringing and background than most of my friends. And I was always very insecure about that, because I felt like it was burdensome to be myself around my friend and to have the rules and to have the upbringing that I did. And so I always tried to kind of fix that for people instead of being honest about what I had to be, or, you know, what time I had to be home, or what my parents' expectations were, or how busy I was with sports or any other thing going on in my life. I would just kind of pretend that didn't exist so that they would just want to spend time with me and make it easy.
And it was very dishonest. Because it would make you different.
I didn't want to be the other. Because
it would make you, yes, the other, the othering. And here's the wild thing about feeling like an outsider. You other yourself because you're so worried about being it.
Right. Right. And I think, like, you think about yourself in high school, and I don't think it was all made up in my head. I definitely think there was the cool kids who had really totally. Easy lives. Like, they, you know, their parents did not have particular expectations of them. They didn't have a ton of rules. They didn't necessarily have to have the part-time jobs that I did or the performance expectations that I had in my life. And so I had to try to find that balance. And what that ended up doing was really belittling what I needed from friendships, because I couldn't ask them. I couldn't ask them to be more flexible for me. Oh. I felt like I couldn't do that, right? I would – the amount of times, Kelly, that I would get in such deep shit with my parents because I would just blatantly ignore curfews and house rules because I didn't want my friends to think it was a burden to hang out with me. And I think this is kind of an not really a talked about form of people pleasing, right? Is we always think about people pleasing as being agreeable and having like this, you know, yes attitude for everything. And that wasn't me. I was a very big no person. I was super argumentative. I was combative. I had never had a problem speaking my mind. But get me to try and be honest about what the expectations were of myself and in my family and in my school dynamics and even sports, I would never be totally upfront about all those things. I would just hide these different parts of myself to make myself seem more palatable and easier to be around. And that's just, I feel like if I could go back and tell myself at 15, like, hey, just be honest with your friends about what time you have to be home instead of stressing the whole night about, you know, not coming home too late, but not wanting to leave too early because you don't want people to think you're lame and stress them out to drive you home.
Well, that's... It's you taking on all the burden of having to manage everyone else's comfort level.
Yes.
And making sure that you are a nice blank slate for everyone to have fun on. And
yes.
That's exactly what my people pleasing feels like too, but mine was in the family. So it's so interesting that you say that, because I agree. The people pleasing that we always think of as being a yes person, no, it's a lot of it is hiding your true self and hiding what you want to say because you feel like it's not going to be received well. And mine really stems from in my family. Everyone's parents, I think now we realize they're just humans, and a lot of them just aren't really that great at being parents, you know, unless it's a big skill. It really is. And I admire parents that are able to show up emotionally and mentally stable for their children to at least give them that space. Dude, my parents just didn't have that. And it doesn't mean they don't love you or care about you, but that is a form of true care and love that I didn't get specifically from one parent. They just did not have the capability to do it. And so when you're a kid, you want to spend time with your parent and they physically just go, nope, I don't have time for you. Like they almost like put a hand up. And if you get really emotional or you respond to them being mean to you and say, hey, I don't like that. I have been like stonewalled by a parent by giving them any feedback they didn't want to hear because they couldn't handle it. So imagine just what that does to your psyche as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. You get into a place of where you're just trying to fix the problem before the problem even happens.
Right. And that means, you know, kind of starting to be manipulative. That's where my people pleasing really got very, I learned to be manipulative by always trying to be in a good mood to make them in a good mood to then want to play with me. Or I would try to figure out manipulative ways to try to get them to talk about their feelings when I never just blatantly would say, I don't like the way this is going, just whatever. And a lot of us deal with that in families because families are really difficult. And when it comes to learning how to change that, one of the things that I've done, all of our family has realized, oh man, we all have noticed that everyone's kind of faking it.
Interesting. So you're saying that you, your whole family, like talking about your mom, your dad, your sister, the four of you have kind of come to this realization that you're all fake around each other because it's easier.
Yeah, you all kind of play a role. And it being in a family is kind of like putting on a musical.
Yeah.
You're dancing around, prancing around. Everyone has their specific role. And we realize that, yeah, being more authentic is very confrontational a lot of the time. But when you start to show your true colors, that can feel very infectious. So then maybe the other person will come back with their authentic self. And it doesn't feel good in the beginning because then you're noticing, wow, the system is now breaking and we don't even really like each other. But here's the thing, feeling tensions and fights and stuff allows you to feel safer to actually talk about stuff and relate to each other. Because my family didn't, we talked so much. We would say, I love you 24/7 and hug. We didn't ever truly talk.
Right. It was just very surface level. And so you kept it in, like anything that you were feeling emotionally distraught about or, you know, something that was maybe dark, you know, it was always about keeping it light and keeping it fun and keeping it simple. There was no complexities.
With your friends,
yeah.
Danny.
Yeah.
Keeping it light. That phrase right there. Just don't overthink it. Don't overanalyze it. Don't make a big deal.
So much of that ties into family. Like I'm going to share a little example with you and I hope that anybody that has had family drama or trauma can relate to this and why it's so important to not hide it. I have an older brother who, you know, we're estranged now. That's probably a full other episode, but he has had a long history with mental illness and it's been really hard to watch. And the first time he was, you know, brought into a psych ward was when I was in the sixth grade. So very young. Aww. And I was so nervous about anybody in my class finding out because I didn't want to have the weird family. I didn't want to you know, the dramatic family. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling my teacher and my teacher was like, you know, Danny, this is really tough. And if you need to support on your friends, you don't have to tell them everything, but just tell them that your brother's in the hospital. And I couldn't. I literally could not tell people because I was so worried about them seeing my family as broken. Do you remember growing up and seeing kids that had divorced parents and thinking, oh God, I'm so glad my parents aren't divorced because, you know, how weird would I look? How different would my life be?
Right. Like the stigma. And then when I was in my 20s and I was like, God, when are they going to get divorced?
Right. Like it's so interesting because as a kid or as a teenager, you don't want to seem like you come from a broken or traumatic family. And the reality is every family has brokenness. Every family has trauma. There's always something that's going to make your life a little bit imperfect or really imperfect in the case of you and I, you know? And I just think now, like, so for so long, I hid that huge thing in my life because I just didn't want other people to know that we had shit going on, that we had dirty laundry. That's a form of people pleasing because it's uncomfortable.
100%.
Even think about, you know, being an adult now to tell people, yeah, my older brother really struggles with his mental health and has been through a lot of really terrible things. people get uncomfortable. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to know that about your life. They want to keep it so light and fluffy. I'm sure for you, like the amount of times that you've probably told people, you know, I've recovered from an eating disorder, and they're like,
I was just going to, okay, Danny, first, before, I don't want you to push onto me. I want to just give you space real quick. I'm so sorry that you've had to go through that and felt the burden of having to hold it in, because that's what really, really hurts you. And you think that it's your duty to hold it in yourself and not burden others. And I just want you to know how grateful I am that you like shed light on that today, because it's such a big burden to carry. And it's really interesting what I thought of when you were sharing that as well about how, okay, so online, I'll talk about everything, right? I'll talk about all my eating disorder recovery. But then when I'm with friends in real life, or for example, like if I was dating someone, or like a guy I was chatting with, or if they want to bring up anything serious, like, oh, I saw you post about that. Are you okay? And I go, yeah, like we don't even have to do, these are my real friends in real life that will ask me about things that I will just type all over the internet or speak into my phone. And if they ask me about anything that I feel like might drop the mood, I've learned to work through this and not do it as much, but it's the first instinct to bury it and be like, oh my God, don't worry about that. I'm good.
It's a form of disassociation too, because when you're online, you can kind of hit send and close your laptop and peace out. Like, I'm done with that topic. Someone's sitting across from you. You and I are going for coffee, and I'm like, Kelly, you shared something pretty, you know, intense the other day. Can we talk about it? And you're like, no, girl, like life's good. Like, it's because to be present in that and feel uncomfortable and be real is really tough.
Oh my God. Just thinking about you confronting me when I think we're just on a fun coffee date triggered me physically. And that didn't even truly happen right now. But that's how my body responds. And that's always a really good signal for me. And all of you listening, when your body does that, because your body will tell you what your emotions are, because we're very good at numbing our brains.
So true.
And I remember before I started therapy, I used to think, no, ew, calm down. And then you let your brain come in. Now I truly say, hey, brain, quiet down. The body's teaching you what you actually think right now.
Yeah. Oh, so true.
We dissociate, and that's what helps us people please a lot, because we think, oh, this is just going to make it a lot easier. And some ways that I've noticed that helped me the most is when I stop trying to make everything easier.
Yeah, just sit in the shittiness of something, or the toughness
of
something.
It's the yuck, 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 gross, disgusting, hate it.
So my question for you is, you know, as recovering people pleasers in different areas of our life, like what's your focus right now? Because obviously it manifests in work, in school, in relationships, in family. Where are you focusing that energy?
I think it's so interesting. I hate that I always say it's so interesting. I'm not that interesting. I just wish I had a better response every time I say that. What I find so wild is I'm so used to my own narrative of being like, I'm such a people pleaser and I always say yes, and that's what I'm working on. I've actually grown out of it a lot. So my people pleasing tendency, even when you asked me this, was trying to be so relatable and pretending that I'm way more broken than I am.
Good for you for recognizing that, because you and I will have this dynamic back and forth. And I think part of it is because we bring ourselves back to a place of being present in the things that we've worked through in therapy, or the things that we're working through in our life. And the reality is that, like, sometimes we've worked through it for the most part, at least at this moment in our life. And it is disingenuous to pretend that you're still really focused on this when the reality is, like, you have fixed a lot of that for yourself.
Yes, like that would have been me giving into the people pleasing and trying to manipulate you all into thinking that I'm so relatable. So if I said something that made me like seem like I was struggling, I used to do that so that people would, you know, care for me and feel bad for me and kind of coddle me, because that's that younger part of me that never got it. And that manifests and comes out in the tiniest, very innocent ways. But then that's not me answering the real question. So, wow, that's my progress right there. That's what I'm working on. You?
Good for you. I think that I'm still working through in my own relationship, and I'm sure anybody that has a romantic partner and even friendships can relate to this, that we look to be treated and loved in a certain way. And instead of just talking about our love languages or what we want, we just hope that if we continue to act a certain way, that person is going to reciprocate. And I've been with my partner for 6 years and I still do this, Kelly. I am, you know, this isn't something that an 18-year-old girl does. This is something that me in my late 20s with a, you know, a stable partner still struggles with, is not just behaving or acting in a certain way to hopefully garner that reciprocated action. And so I catch myself constantly questioning my motivation of, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I genuinely want him to feel special and to feel loved and to be appreciated? Or is it because I hope that he will do the same for me without telling him that I want that?
Damn.
It's true though. And to be honest, I still manipulate that. I still will be like, I'm going to do this out of spite.
And that's okay.
To get it done.
Oh, man.
And get the same reaction out of you. And what I'm finding is, and the interesting thing is, when I've stopped doing those things for other people, not just my partner, they're like, oh, you've changed, or do you not like me anymore? And it's provided the opportunity to be like, you know what? My motivation for that was not correct. And I'm going to tell you why. And opening that up and them kind of hearing, okay, you were just doing that to get this reaction out of me or this affection out of me. Can we just talk about it instead? And so I'm really working on opening up the conversation to be like, hey, I'm feeling super lonely. Can you be more affectionate with me? Instead of me just like smothering them with attention, hoping that they'll be able to give it back.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. And that is the most absolutely relatable action that we often take, because how vulnerable is it to say, I need this?
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks sometimes.
And it's not that I really don't love when people say, you can't expect people to read your mind. Oh, it's far beyond that. It's just, it's not that. It's just, we're afraid, you know.
And we genuinely believe, like, movies and media have taught us that those people should, if they love you, they should just do it. That's just an action of love. And that's just simply not true. Love languages are so different across the board that, like, you know, just because my love language is affection doesn't mean that, you know, he doesn't love me if he's not naturally physically affectionate towards me. It is a balance of that person learning what you need and you telling them what you need.
Do you think that there is any – so when I think about what you said earlier about, you know, being complex or having any complexities as a teen and you really wanted to just be like a very palatable slate, do you ever feel like sometimes even by having needs, it's like, oh, another thing about Danny?
100%.
Right?
I have thought about often the times where I've been closest to my partner in my life, and it's usually when – I'm going through something traumatic, or I've experienced a loss, or life has really shifted for us. And yet still, I will try to kind of filter that out in day to day because I don't want to seem burdensome. You know, it's very interesting that, like, you can think about exactly what you just said, where it's like the needs piece. I don't know if you can relate to this. I was the cool girlfriend.
I'm sure I can.
I was the cool girlfriend. I was the girlfriend that all of my boyfriend at the time's friends were like, Danny's so cool. She's so chill. She's so fun to be around. And that has manifested now later where I'm like, I don't want to seem needy. I don't want to seem insecure. I don't want to seem like I add any extra drama to your life. The reality is, it's not drama. It's just life. It just life fucking happens.
Danny, I do the same. I have the same tendencies as you for the complete opposite reason, because when I was younger, I was struggling so much with an eating disorder, anxiety, depression, family trauma, binge eating disorder, like suicidal ideation, you know, all the classic stuff of just struggling and not knowing, right? A lot of us really do have that same narrative, and it feels like a lot. It's like, yeah, it does feel like a lot because I was going through it. But my biggest insecurity was the fact that for a lot of my life, I was the too much person. And I was told that by my family.
Yeah. So you try to minimize that. You try to minimize the trauma so that you can just seem more, again, palatable and easy to be around. And there's no stress. Oh, yeah. There's never any stress with Kelly. There's never any stress with Danny. Yeah. They figured their shit out. And it's like, the reality is life evolves. There are times where my life has literally no drama in it. And I'm like, okay, great. And then there are other times where shit just hits the fan. And sometimes it's not even in my control. Like, it genuinely is just stuff that's happening that I cannot control.
Well, something that will never be able to rid my mind, and I'm pretty sure he's very satisfied with this. I had an ex-partner call me a woman with psychoses. When
we spit out my drink.
And when we were in a situation where our couples counselor gave a very severe diagnosis of this person, and I'm not one to try to point fingers, I actually didn't believe the couples therapist that was telling my partner and I a lot of these things about my partner regarding their condition and affliction when it comes to a diagnosis regarding personality disorders, okay?
Yeah.
And then later on, me trying to stay away from a certain person, I was labeled as a woman with psychoses. So that goes to show you all that no matter how other people view you, you can't take that on.
No.
And it doesn't mean they're wrong or you're right. It's you have to stay on your path of getting to know yourself and connecting with yourself. And the whole point of healing from people pleasing is not to learn how to disappoint others, because that's once again you thinking about other people. It's going inward and noticing, what do I really like? What do I really want? What do I really need? And how do I allow myself to show up authentically and unapologetically and physically communicate it?
Yeah. Because you can still want people to be happy and live your life, yes, unapologetically. You know, it's not all of a sudden like you take this shift where you're like, fuck what you think and fuck everything that you feel. I'm living my life unapologetically. And I think that is where we get so confused in the messaging, is we put the two together. We say, in order for me to live my life unapologetically, it means middle finger to the world.
Yeah, and I hate that.
It's not that necessarily that. For some people, maybe it is. But I know for me personally, it has just been coming to terms with, I'm not absorbing whatever you're feeling about this. And taking it on and taking ownership of it. I empathize with you. I understand that this might make you uncomfortable. I understand that this might make you feel upset or feel betrayed or whatever feeling you're feeling. That's yours to own. I acknowledge it. I'm still standing my ground on this, or I'm still going to act this way. I'm still going to do this, you know?
Vent here. This is the part of the show where we react to your vents, and I absolutely love giving you all the space to share what you're feeling, what you're going through right now, anything that might be bugging you, or something really cool that's gone on in your life. We are going to react and respond right now.
Okay, Kelly, this one I think should resonate with you, maybe. My family gives me shit for being an influencer and not having a real job, in quotations, no support.
Oh, that sucks. And actually, okay, my family's the complete opposite, but it still activates the feeling that I should still be doing more. And my people pleaser nature comes out in the way where, because they're so excited that they do it, they often say to me, keep doing it, because, you know, strike while the iron's hot. And it's almost more pressure.
Interesting.
Because my parents are actually industry people. They're actors, singers, like they were in the entertainment industry. So they know how it's really fleeting.
Yeah.
And I think because they have that knowledge, it makes me feel so insecure when they do support me. And I know that sounds a little bit privileged, but I think you all will understand how when sometimes people believe in you so much or want you to like, yeah, do it. You almost feel like you're failing already.
Yeah, like the pressure is on to be able to perform. And because your parents understand the industry a bit more, you may feel like anytime you're not doing enough or you failed in an area or you don't land a contract or whatever, if you're not spending all this time on the app, that you're like letting them down somehow.
Yeah. And I can imagine too, the insecurity of not being seen as having a real job. And if you don't have your family support, that kills you. When you don't have your roots of your life having your back, it's pretty hard to find your footing. And I want you to know that we support you. There are so many people that think what you do is absolutely incredible. And sometimes it's so hard for us to get our parents to see us.
Yeah. And I think too, just remember that it's not just people who are in the influencer space. I mean, I did my undergrad in poli sci, and I work as an event planner right now. And my parents still think I'm going to go back to doing something in poli sci because they don't necessarily validate that the industry, they don't understand it. So I don't think it's just influencers. I think there's definitely a variety of anything that our parents just don't get, right? It's just, it's that they don't understand us and they don't understand what we're doing. And so they naturally go towards something that they understand, whether that's, you know, maybe what they consider a real job as an industry that existed when they were growing up versus things that are just too new to them. So just remember, you're not alone in that, because there's many of us who don't necessarily have the support that we envisioned from our parents. And it comes from a lack of understanding.
And just know, if you have some friends in your life who go, oh, who cares? We support you. No. It is very normal to feel very devastated by your family not supporting you. That's what I don't like when people say, oh, it's like they don't get it. Right. I know they don't get it. And it's hurtful.
Totally.
And it's scary for people to validate when things are hurtful. And we're validating it for you and holding space. Mwah.
So going into the topic of work a little bit more, this person just quit a job causing severe burnout. They feel like they're slowly coming back to life, though. So good for you that you're slowly coming back to life, because work burnout is so tough. And why do we get work burnout, Kelly?
Oh, that's exactly. I feel like people pleasing will always lead to burnout in life.
Yes.
Because what you do when you're trying to be successful at something or make someone happy with your work or just tirelessly doing something, it takes a lot of your energy out, because you're not just doing the task, you're doing it to please someone else, which is an emotional ask.
Yeah,
it is totally. A mental and emotional versus just a physical task. And I am so freaking proud of this person for getting out of it. I mean, that takes serious bravery.
Have you ever had an instance where you like had to quit a job, or maybe like more particularly you failed at a job because you were taking on too much and you were like burnt out?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have a good story about this. I was so mortified in college when I really burnt myself to the ground in college. You know, I'd always been a very hard worker, but not in the way that I feel pride in, like a really unhealthy perfectionist numb person. I had an internship, I had two jobs, I was working in a dining hall, I had all these different like positions while doing my undergrad, and I wanted to get all A's. It was just very intense.
Yeah.
And all self-inflicted while dealing with the most severe binge eating disorder ever. Oh my God. Ever.
When it rains, it pours.
Yeah. And I was working at an Asian cultural center as the senior intern, which was like the top position that I wanted to get because I had worked under the first year. And mid-semester, I actually just asked my supervisor for a meeting, and I felt such a failure. I just almost started crying during the meeting saying I have to quit. And I was really emotional because I already felt so mortified by the fact that they knew I was slipping already. So it wasn't like I came in shocking them. It was almost having to surrender. And that's why I think that's when people pleasing gets to such an extent where you're trying to also control how everyone views you.
Oh my gosh. And it's so
And then it feels worse.
Like
let them down.
It's that letting them down piece, because I've been in similar situations where you get an opportunity that you feel like you can't pass up, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, yes, I need to take this on. They believe in me. And so you do it. Yeah. And then, you know, all of a sudden you have this extra thing. Mine was very similar, where I was an intern for a creative project. And it was actually, in hindsight, way out of my league. And I was just too young. And they obviously saw something in me, which is amazing. But I didn't have the experience. I had way too much on my plate with school, and it just started slipping. And thankfully, it slipped pretty early into the project. I was only in about 3 months. And I remember there was a meeting that I had missed, and it was purely because I dropped the ball. Like, I just had too much on my plate, and I
hate when that happens. It feels so shameful and shocking.
And the person who was the like executive director of this project just texted me. He was like, I don't think you have the passion for this like we thought you did. And it was like the most painful thing I had ever received. And at the end of the day, it was because I was such a people pleaser that at the beginning I hadn't been upfront about what I could offer. I had just said yes to everything. And did I let them down? Absolutely. Did I let myself down? Even more, because I was so burnt out that I didn't have any passion for it by the end. And, you know, I got replaced. Great. The project went on. Life goes on. But, you know, you and I can still look back at that and feel those feelings now. And that was like 7 years ago, 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Mine was 7 years ago, and it still hits me in the gut. And this is going to be maybe something that puts a smile on your guys' faces, because this is what made me feel really healed a little bit from it. Is honestly, 2 years ago, the director of that center asked me to come back and do a speaking engagement.
Nice.
At the programming lecture series that I used to have to work for.
Oh, full circle.
And I almost didn't want to do it, though, because I was so embarrassed by the last time I saw him, which was crying in the office giving my 2 weeks notice.
Yeah. Writing your own narrative, though, because you carried that and you thought these people never want to work with
me. Oh, I thought he hated me.
And in reality, you know, a lot of these people, not every boss, but a lot of people can look and read between the lines and see, okay, this person has too much on their plate. And they can still look now, whatever, 7 years later, and be like, Kelly's a great influence and we should definitely have her in working with us in some capacity, right?
I know. And I felt such imposter syndrome when I was doing it. I felt so uncomfortable.
We're all working through it. Next time I call you, though, you'll be ready. You'll be ready.
Yes. It went well, but that just goes to show, too, when we're people pleasers, too, we want to make sure everyone thinks that we're chill and we're good.
Yeah.
Smiling so much.
All right, one last one for you here, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Kelly, particularly you. Being the person everyone in my family leans on leaves me emotionally drained sometimes.
Speaking as my family's therapist, thank you for validating my experience.
Right?
The wildest part that really does still piss me off, and I tell my family this pisses me off about them, when they say this to me, Kelly, I just... thank you so much for all the work you've done in your own therapy and bringing it back home and teaching us. Without you, we would all just be so lost.
Like, go to therapy.
And we probably wouldn't understand each other at all. And we would not be any... I just can't even take that as a compliment, because what it means is... and I'm not trying to be salty. It genuinely means the burden of the youngest kid of the family to try to tell you daily that there's so many things going on that are not healthy. Years later, you've listened. I really do appreciate it, because they have also put work into here, right? Like, I truly think that they had to eventually open their ears. I'm so grateful for that. But oh my God, the burden that you put on one person to help everyone else do some self-actualization.
Yeah. Oh. God. And I think we've all been this person somewhere in our lives, whether it's our family or a friend, where we take on the role of becoming their therapist in some ways to manage whatever they're going through. Not to say that we can't be there for each other and that we shouldn't, but there's definitely a line where it starts to literally burn you out and consume all of your energy. Right.
And it's a combination of I have to learn that I have a lot of responsibility and take accountability for the fact that I chose to do that, because a lot of people don't have that tendency to try to fix people. A lot of people don't need to do that. Unfortunately, because of my lack of sense of self for many years of my life, I wanted to help others so that we would all do better. And as I've gotten older and have gone through a lot of therapy, I no longer try to teach anyone anything. Thank you all so much for listening to Therapy Thursday. We hope that this helped you unearth some of the things that have been brooding inside of you, and we put a nice positive light on it for you to just let yourself see yourself more. And we will talk to you at next Therapy Thursday. Bye.